Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Live from the Nasdaq market site in the heart of New York City's Times Square, this is Fast Money. Here's what's on tap tonight. Magic for Disney shares the entertainment giant about to lock in their best quarter in over 3 years, with CEO Bob Iger facing a potentially nasty battle over board seats. Can the stock keep rocketing higher? We'll debate that. Plus, a Boeing bounce, shares of the aerospace giant rising as much as 4% after announcing CEO Dave Calhoun will leave the company at the end of the year. Will new leadership be enough to get the stock back on track? And later, massive moves from Micron as the semi stock locks in its seventh day of gains. Bitcoin breaks higher and takes the rest of the crypto space with it. And Reddit options hit the market. We'll dive into the pits to find out where our traders bet their shares are heading right now. I'm Melissa Lee, coming to you live from Studio B at the Nasdaq. On the desk tonight, Tim Seymour, Bono and Eisen, Dan Nathan, and Guy Adami. And we start off with Disney's proxy battle royale, with just over a week away from the company's annual shareholder meeting on April 3rd. Nelson Peltz's Trian Fund Management in the final stages of its campaign to secure seats on Disney's board. Just today, Trian's board said it was withholding its votes from CEO Bob Iger, a move that contrasts with the firm's proxy recommendations and Peltz's own public statements. But since Peltz reignited his proxy battle for the Magic Kingdom in October, Disney shares have soared nearly 44%. Barclays today upgrading the stock, raising their price target to $135. That's on shares up 3% to their highest close since August 2022. It is now nearly a dollar above the average analyst price target on the street. So is Barclays right? Do Disney shares go even higher from here? Tim, what do you think? Shareholder Tim, what do you think?
I think there's a valuation argument that they should go higher. And I think there's certainly been an ability to play some of the parts. I think the broader tailwinds in the entire streaming space, I know that sounds crazy. It's not just Netflix, though. I mean, we've certainly heard from Disney their ability to control costs. And I think the profitability of this business is still a very big deal and a big driver for this stock. But I think if you look at the core drivers for the company and how the investor community is coming about, I would also just say this is a story of the broader strength across the real economy stocks. And so I do think that agitation at the top isn't a bad thing. I think the fact of the matter is there has been a need to push a little bit of outside influence at Disney. I do think that there is an environment where there's less reliance on the studio. There's less reliance on things that used to be the heyday. And that may be a good thing. But right now, I think it's a valuation story for the street. It's interesting to see these same analysts that probably were 20% lower on their target prices don't really have a whole lot to raise it for other than possibly this agitation.
Right. And it's not just Peltz in agitating for change. There's also Blackwell's. And then on top of this, analyst at Barclays is making the case that earnings stability has improved greatly because of cost cutting. So you have that plus the potential kicker, the potential upside from some of these proxy battle, efficiencies that can be thought.
And obviously, Robert Iger has a stake in seeing this do well. He doesn't want to be, the second iteration being a failure. And the stock, I have the stock up over now 50% from the lows we saw in October. But we're splitting hairs in terms of when Nelson Peltz reiterated. But, valuation, what's the trade? Maybe 20 times next year's numbers. You put a couple turns on that, you get to 23, 24, and you got a stock that could easily trade into the mid-130s into earnings in early May. So you've had this quiet, stealth rally. Cost cutting, you don't cost cut your way to greatness, but you certainly can cost cut your way to a stock that can continue to rally in this environment.
Yeah, and I guess, the thing is, right, when Chapek came over or filled in for Iger, took the job, right, there was a lot of this sort of groupthink that I think that was going on. I think Tim made a really good point, right, to have some outside agitation at a time where so many different large media conglomerates have been disrupted over the last 10 years. These guys made a huge push to kind of go all in on streaming and end up not being the right bet at the right time. I think they thought about defending their moats and kind of, all these upstarts like Netflix in particular were coming in. But when you think about how this business has operated, especially with the cost cuts over the last couple of years, because of, I guess, the nature of the business in general. But now that you've had this proxy thing going on for a while and a change of management. I just can't see how it ends up being a bad thing, however it ends up, in my personal opinion. And then you think about where the earnings are stabilizing and how they're growing double digits over the next couple of years at a valuation that you're talking about 22 times next. It seems like it's going to come out okay either way, you know, at the end of that. I mean,
it's a win-win.
Well, I do. I really do think so. You know what I mean? And it seems like they have things kind of under control in some of the things that people were most worried about 2 years ago.
Or is a win-win situation already reflecting the stock's run?
Well, it could be.
I think I'm in that camp, at least for the short term. I think the stock has had quite a run, 45%. I think it's 45% over the last 6 months. I think it's 25, 30% year to date. It's trading in the mid-20s in terms forward EPS. I think it's pretty fairly priced here. I do like Tim's point about it kind of reflecting the broader economy. I think there's like actually a bit of a tailwind there. However, I'm not sure that just this proxy battle in and of itself is really like an accretive situation for the company. In fact, you can't even get Triad and Blackwell on the same page in terms of how they want to go about seeking out these board seats. So I think it gives a signaling effect that they are going to do something different. And to Dan's point about them cost-cutting after going all in on streamings, I think that's right-sizing the ship. What takes that ship to new heights? I'm not really sure I see that right now.
What might take that ship to new heights is ESPN. I still think that there's a lot of optionality around that. This whole DTC concept, and we still don't really know what's going on with this crazy JV. I will say DTC is a kind of expensive endeavor if you think about what it's going to cost. And yet, there's only so much in the way of a TAM out there for this. But I do think that ESPN has been underpriced in terms of this sum of the parts. I do think it's a case where everybody knows what's happened to linear TV, but I still think the power of this brand is enormous. I also think people are underestimating, and I don't know this, but I'd say it's probably mostly base case, not pie in the sky case, that they get to profitability in fiscal 24 on streaming. And if they get there, I mean, I say look out, because this has been such a drag, and I think this operating income of 20 to 25% is realistic.
All right, let's dive deeper into what to expect at next week's shareholder meeting. Joining us here on set is our own Julia Boyce.
Right, clap her in. Yeah, we got to clap her in.
Welcome,
clap her in.
Julia, it's always a pleasure to have you here. So there are two activists in the stock right now. They issued both statements today. I mean, what do you make of the battle and where it stands right now? It seems very heated and very contentious.
Very contentious, but I feel like a lot of what we've been hearing the last couple of weeks is just more of the same. Mm. There really isn't going to be any more major news until we have this shareholder meeting. We've heard from so many different people who are in support of Bob Iger and his management slate for Disney. I mean, just to mention some of the big names, you have George Lucas, you have Lorraine Powell Jobs, both of whom represent some big M&A deals that Iger did under his first tenure as CEO, and who are now saying we are voting in support of Iger. You have Michael Eisner, who is Iger's predecessor. All of these names saying we support Iger, we believe he is the right person to run this company, and his board is the right person to oversee it. Jamie Dimon also weighed in support of him. So now that we've heard the support from those big names, it's really what Peltz is saying and continuing to say. The fact that he decided to withhold his votes in support of Iger, which is in contrast, as you mentioned, to what they said they were going to do, I think that's also just noise. At the end of the day, he's trying to poke the bear, and he really wants to highlight the fact that he doesn't believe that the current plan is going to be successful. I think ultimately what we're seeing right now from Iger is what he laid out in the last earnings, which really showed an acceleration of some of their key growth points, and also showed that what he'd been working to implement was working. And in the interview where he sat down with me, you saw the stock rise over the course of that interview, because he laid out whether it was the ESPN spinoff or the joint venture, even though we don't have a lot of details about it, or turning around the studio. They just announced a new head of the studio, or the fact that streaming is perhaps going to be unprofitable earlier than expected. And that is the thesis of the Barclays note that was out today.
So let's say Peltz prevails. Iger stays in and Peltz gets elected to the board along with his pick, who is a former CFO, correct? Is it all of the same? Is it Bob Iger's plan continues to move forward, and so there's not tremendous change, but it's just sort of finally seeing what Bob Iger has laid out and seeing seeing it come to fruition, basically?
Well, I think no matter who is elected to the board, this year will be the year where we see all of the investments that Iger made last year come to fruition. If you look at the parks, for instance, this is a part of the business that takes years of investment. They have three new cruise ships that are launching in 2025 and 2026. That's going to create a huge tailwind to the parks business, as is the fact that they've been expanding the actual real estate of the parks. So if Jay Rizzullo is back. I think it will be a challenge for Bob Iger to have Nelson Peltz and Jay Rizzullo on the board because they are so clearly in conflict. But I don't have a crystal ball, so I can't exactly predict what's going to happen next year. Next week.
How important is legacy? He walked away the first time. He would have been in the Hall of Fame, first ballot, no question. Comes back, and now people might start questioning things. So, first question is, do you think he's happy he came back? Second question is, how important to his legacy is getting this right?
He needs to get this right. He understands that, and he's said that repeatedly. He wants to get this right for the company and for his own legacy and for all of these people who work for Disney and for Disney shareholders. And I think he sees it as a multiple stakeholder business. And also, if you think about Disney consumers, he talks about wanting to get the studio right and wanting to make sure that they have more of these big blockbuster hits, which they had fewer of last year. So I think he understands that the stakes are very high, but it's been just fascinating to watch the range of different changes he's implemented in the past year. And this is the year when we really see what those look like.
Julia, maybe this puts you a little bit on the spot, but what do you Peltz's agenda do you think is legit? I mean, we're it's easy to talk about someone who's an activist and he's there to agitate and this is what he does for a living, but there are some legitimate claims.
But what's interesting is a lot of the things that
she's
he's advocating for.
Me.
No, I'm going to answer. A lot of the things he's advocating for are actually things that Iger's already doing.
Right.
For instance, cost cutting.
Yep.
His big thing is cost cutting, cost cutting, cost cutting. Iger has already done a lot of that. The other thing that he's really focused on is succession planning. And you could say that Iger is working on that too. So what's interesting is in a lot of ways, they're not really an opposition. He made some comments about the sort of cultural connotations of the studio. This is an area where he doesn't have a lot of expertise. And obviously, Iger has already made changes in the studio. So I don't know how much he would be a helpful aid
in
there.
Yeah,
but frankly, the board members don't really weigh in on the studio. That's just not something that a board would necessarily do in terms of the logistics of films. But I think that his overwhelming focus on succession planning is something that I can guarantee you is top of mind for Iger and his current board and a lot of people who work for him as well.
Julia, thank you so much for coming by. You're
great
welcome
to have
here
her
anytime.
In person.
Pleasure to be here.
Julia Boorstin. All right, so what do you think?
That board is like, and it's like the, you know, Mount Rushmore of CEOs right now. If you think about it, they have Mary Barra, they have Mark Parker from Nike, they have Safra Katz from Oracle, they have James Gorman. You know what I mean? Like, when you think about it, if this is about board seats, they're already doing the cost cutting. They're doing a lot of that other stuff. So I just think about this, is like this company is being run by one of the most successful CEOs in the last 100 years, you know what I mean, of Fortune 100 companies. I suspect staking his reputation and his legacy on this with that sort of board that's in place with the cost cutting that's in effect, I think they'll probably get it right.
Yeah.
The lowest on the street in terms of price target, I think, is $66. The range is like $66 to $142.
Yeah.
So what's going to wind up happening, I think, in terms, I understand what Bonowin's saying, he's probably going to be right on, but analysts will start to have to play catch up on this name like you saw today. I think that will get you to that 135 price target.
Let's get to today's other big story. Boeing shares rising nearly 4% at its highs of the day on news that CEO Dave Calhoun will step down at the end of this year. Shares gave back much of the gains, but still closed in the green. Calhoun's departure just one of many changes announced at the company. Former Qualcomm CEO Steve Mollenkopf will succeed Larry Kellner as the board chair and lead the CEO search. And COO Stephanie Pope will now serve as a commercial airplane CEO. Dave Calhoun was on CNBC this morning speaking about his vision for his successor.
I want somebody who knows how to handle a big, long, long cycle business like ours. It's not just the production of the airplane. It's the development of the next airplane. Our next leader is going to develop and call out the next airplane for the Boeing company. It'll be a $50 billion investment. That will all happen on that next leader's watch.
Will this change be what the company needs to get back on track? Stock's reaction was interesting. It wasn't as robust as one might have thought it would be.
We talked about it last week. Phil LeBeau, which we had the conversation, was clear that Phil didn't want to get into it in great detail, but I think he probably saw this coming. However, playing the game, if I had told you on Friday or Thursday what would happen to me, the stocks would be north of $200. And quite frankly, earlier this morning, it looked like that was going to exactly happen. We gave some of it back. I still think the stock is higher into earnings. I think this was a necessary step. It's somewhat mitigated by the fact that he's leaving at the end of the year and not, you know, immediately. However, with that said, you know, I think that 179 low that we saw a couple weeks ago is going to be the low for a while.
the shakeup was needed. We were on the show a couple of weeks ago talking about essentially when will the Newswire get positive about this stock, and it was when the Newswire stops. I wouldn't be surprised if 737 Max is just banished from dictionaries on going forward. With that said, I think what would stop the rally from continuing forward is that there is not a clear succession plan in place, and we just talked about it around Disney. I think once we have a firm name in terms of what that handoff is going to look like, I think that will probably lead to what I think most people at this point view as an inevitable change.
Well, I wonder if it's going to be an outsider. And one might posit that Boeing would be better off looking at an outsider for the job.
Yes, especially when you consider that Dave Calhoun was an insider. I mean, he was at the board for 10 years before he was named in 2019 during a really difficult time again. And again, you know, he was not necessarily really in that, absolutely was not in that chair during those bad Max 8 crashes, awful time for the company. And then they went into COVID. And it was, I mean, it was really an incredibly tumultuous period for Mr. Calhoun, who clearly was from the inside. That was the whole point. That's why he was supposed to be there. I just get back to also, this is a CEO announcement. It's a critical company. You could make an argument it's a strategic company in this country, and it will continue to be. This is a company that, despite all of this, is still going to print over $10 billion in free cash flow by 2025. I mean, I think we lose sight of the fact that Boeing is still a world-class company, that everything they do is under the microscope, as it probably should be. But nonetheless, this is a company I want to own, and I do.
All right. Coming up, red hot Reddit shares soaring on the social stocks the third day of trading, and options activity is lighting up more on the subreddit surge next. Plus, semi sideline, how China may be looking to phase out U.S. chips and the impact it could have on the tech names. The details when Fast Money returns.
This is Fast Money with Melissa Lee, right here on CNBC.
You seek the key, but first, you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
What does it mean to be rich? Is it having more stories to share or time to give? Is it being able to keep your loved ones close or travel somewhere far away? At Edward Jones, we believe the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Your dedicated financial advisor will take a comprehensive approach to your financial strategy to help support what truly matters to you. EdwardJones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Reddit shares surging 30% to kick off the company's first full week as a publicly traded stock. The stock's options debuting today with some eye-popping numbers. Let's get straight to Mike Coe with all the action. Hey, Mike, what are you seeing?
Yeah, so Reddit traded over 81,000 contracts today. That would have placed it ranked 30th in the Russell 1000 if it was in the Russell 1000 above JP Morgan. And right now, the options are pricing some pretty violent moves. If you take a look at the April straddle, basically it's implying that the stock could move about 35% higher or lower over the course of the next 3 weeks. But actually, considering how much it moved today, that seems very fairly priced to me. The busiest contract were the April 75 calls. Those are 25% out of the money. Over 7,000 of those traded. Buyers of those calls obviously betting that today's rally could continue.
Wow. Do you interpret this, Mike, and I would, you know, that this is retail action?
Well, there is a lot of retail action. And actually, you know, 81,000 contracts, given the fact that the stock traded 22 million, oftentimes when you see these really volatile stocks, you'll actually start to see that the option volume will exceed the equity volume. This, because it was the first day, maybe some people weren't even aware that they were able to trade these things yet. But the one thing you do expect is that over time, usually over the first couple of weeks, you have this really high volatility, and then it'll start to fall off steadily as people sort of find a level for the stock, and the options premiums will also come in a bit.
All right. Mike, thanks, as always. Mike Coe. Meantime, the original meme stock, GameStop, shares seeing their best day since November, up more than 15% today. The company reports earnings tomorrow. And check out Digital World Acquisition Corp soaring 35%. It will complete its merger with the parent company of Donald Trump's Truth Social tomorrow. under the ticker DJT, so we'll convert tomorrow to that. I don't know, what do we make of this action overall and these sort of meme riskier names? But, you know, the action Reddit is very interesting considering the huge dramatic surge that we've seen since the debut.
Well, I think if you think about what's going on in the semiconductor space, there's been a narrowing within that too, right? So we've seen that over the last, let's call it week. We've lost AMD, lost Intel, but you still have SMCI and NVIDIA pushing higher. So I think the idea that there's more supply coming on the market, new stories that people can pick through, that sort of thing. Look at this Astera Labs. It was up 23% today. Look at how Bitcoin's traded or some of the stocks that are related to Bitcoin, that sort of thing. It just seems like there is demand for scarcity right now, which seems like a great time to bring your private company to market if you are considering such a thing, especially when you consider the S&P at NASDAQ at all-time highs.
Well, Bitcoin's over 70,000. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's definitely a correlation there. I mean, the risk frenzy that's going on with some of the same investor group. I mean, I don't. What was the news in GameStop today? I mean,
I mean, they're going to have earnings tomorrow.
Right.
But short squeeze in earnings.
So here's the point. I don't follow GameStop. So, you know, but I don't want to follow GameStop. I mean, I'm not even sure what goes on there. So, I mean, I think there's a lot of stocks in this milieu that are rallying with all the risk on right now. Markets are at all-time highs.
Yeah, I think Reddit is somewhat of a poster child for that retail trading cohort that is sophisticated, perhaps a bit angry or anti, as they say. And I wouldn't be surprised to see this stock continue to trade with quite a bit of volatility. I think they expected that. And I think we shouldn't be surprised to see the options activity, being that that has been the cohort of retail investors that have really grasped on to squeezing companies through optionality and gamma squeezes.
By the way, Reddit shares are up 9% after hours. There's a lot more fast money to come. Here's what's coming up next.
A chip crunch in China. Some semi stocks getting hit as the country looks to push out U.S. manufacturers. What the move could mean for the chip space. Next. Plus, bulking up while slimming down. The weight loss wars rage on, and one company is trying to combat one major side effect from the big players. How one pharma name is tipping the scales with a new experimental drug. You're watching Fast Money, live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. We're back right after this.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Stocks kicking off the last week of the quarter in the red. The Dow down more than 160 points. The S&P and NASDAQ both falling about 0.3%. Shares of Ulta in need of some concealer. Beauty stock on an eight-day losing streak, down nearly 11% in that time. Some stocks though hitting all-time highs in today's session: Royal Caribbean, Colgate-Palmolive, Allstate, Ingersoll Rand, and Cigna all trading at those levels, and a number of energy names doing the same. Marathon Petroleum, Phillips 66, Valero, Constellation, Diamondback Energy, Fang, which is on a 15-day winning streak, tying its longest streak ever. We were just talking about these names.
We were. I mean, throw up an XLE chart. I mean, very quietly, that's trading up to close to a prior all-time high. And energy is clearly in play. And if technology ever gives it up in a meaningful way, I think the money flows are going to be into the energy sector because it makes sense. And I think Morgan Stanley, I think Mike Wilson made comments about the energy sector as well. So underloved, reasonable valuations, great balance sheets, and the commodities working for you, too.
Free cash flow, profitability. I think, as you said, if you do see that rotation out of technology, you're going to be looking for somewhere that gives you some like modicum or level of safety. And I think you're going to traditionally think about utilities. I'm not sure if you want to deal with rates here. Then you're going to think about healthcare. And I really think that there's been winners and losers there. If you're not on the GLP-1s or weight loss adjacent, you probably have kind of gotten your lunch eaten. And it's hard to really squeeze out the performance there, even with the low beta. So I'm with Guy. I think it's an under-owned segment. XLE, OIH has also made a tear. And you're still starting to see some M&A activity in the space. So the consolidation means fewer players, and as Tim has mentioned several times, much more efficiently run companies.
Yeah, look, I'd say don't get too far away from technology either. I understand it's not been a big day, but I mean, I think the market broadening is where it is. This is all happening on as rates are going higher, dollars going higher. So I'm not sure that the dollar has a lot of higher, much higher movement in it. I do think, actually, that there's opportunities in the broadening of the market, and the energy sector is a perfect example. But other parts of, again, reaching out for risk, look at biotech, IBB, you know, again, breaking out. So on a day when the market was largely flat to down small, it's easy to say, hey, what happened to mega cap tech? But I don't think you'd get too far.
All right. Coming up, a big year for semi stocks, but could one overseas adjustment spell trouble for the entire chip trade? More out of the mainland next. And bulking up in the weight loss space, one pharma company looking to combat muscle loss tied to obesity drugs. The CEO will join us in just a few minutes to weigh in. Don't go anywhere. Fast Money's back in two.
Missed a moment of Fast? Catch us anytime on the go. Follow the Fast Money podcast. We're back right after this.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Intel and Advanced Micro under pressure today after the Financial Times reported Beijing introduced new guidelines to block U.S. chip makers and government computers and servers. This is the CEOs of Apple, Qualcomm, and Micron head to Beijing to meet with the premier. Shares of Micron jumping nearly 7% today, its seventh day of gains in a row. So what does this all mean for the chip space? First, I was kind of surprised they allowed U.S. chips at all into their servers, et cetera. But this is the case now. And so what do you make of it?
I mean, listen, I would continue like all year long. We're going to see this get ratcheted up. Right. And so we're going to obviously retaliate a little bit. And we've been doing this. We've been kind of leading the charge a little bit. I mean, at some point, you have to think about who's next in the crosshairs a little bit and who might have to do, you know, go through the sort of hoops that NVIDIA had to do to sell certain GPUs into China and the like here. But I mean, make no mistake about it. I mean, the Chinese are really trying to actually do everything that they've actually had, you know, our chip makers doing over there, being built over there, you know, in Taiwan semi-fab. And the like, they're trying to do it there locally, and they're going to play the long game here. So if they can kind of, you know, go back and forth and kind of weaken our companies in the near term, I think they're going to probably try to do that as much as possible.
I don't think, again, this is my view, but I've had this view and it hasn't been right, but the market is not pricing any of the ratcheting up of the rhetoric between the United States and China, whose relations are probably the worst they've been since the early 1970s. So if this thing does get worse, there's got to be, at some point, there has to be a tipping point for our market here to the extent that the rhetoric continues to go higher, and which it will, by the way.
What would that tipping point be, though? I mean, I feel like this has been ratcheted up just a notch, a notch, a notch, a notch. And we don't realize, to mix metaphors, and I'll do this on purpose because it drives you nuts.
Yeah, I don't like a good mixed metaphor.
You don't feel like the water is boiling.
No horse in the hunt here.
The temperature has been going up so slowly, but that's what's happening.
It has been a slow simmer, not a slow burn. Mm-hmm. But it's a case where if you listen to the charm offensive of the Chinese Commerce Secretary over the last couple of days, there are other sectors that are being engaged actively. But you've also heard the Micron CEO say, hey, look, we're planning on big things in China. I think every side is doing what they need to do. The fact that they're selling Intel on this is not the reason you sell Intel today. And for all of the pain they're having in China, I think they're getting inflated in this country. And I am long Intel. But yeah, stakes have been raised. We know it.
One emerging markets analyst believes China is not essential to Intel in Advanced Micro. David Riedel runs Riedel Research Group, got back from Taiwan just a few days ago. So why do you think, is it just jumping to conclusions? Is that why we saw that sort of knee-jerk reaction in those two names, David?
I think it is. I mean, clearly China is a major market for Intel chips, almost 30% of their sales. Same for AMD, about 15%. But not a lot of that's ending up in the government sector. And this is going to be a slow rollout of this prohibition on having them in government computers only. So I don't see it having a big impact.
Can we jump to the conclusion, though, that this is just the beginning? Because maybe that's what the markets are thinking. They're not thinking about just this one step, but thinking about what if it went a little bit further, and that would be a ban on these chips inside any of the computers.
Well, it's certainly not the beginning, because we've been banning Huawei and other chips and things from China since 2019, and this was a policy that was promulgated at the end of December. So this is just a sort of shining a light on a policy that's actually already been in place for a couple of months. So I think you are probably going to get incremental changes as they ratchet up this concern. The current administration has been very firm on trying to prevent advanced chips from getting into China and trying to encourage chip development here at home. And I think that's going to continue.
Do you think investors here are adequately pricing in a potential China risk? Are we just sort of hoping that it just stays simmering and nothing really explosive actually happens? Should we start thinking about that, especially as we head towards the elections?
I don't, in terms of a particular company impact or something like that. I think there will be an incremental movement towards nationalism from Beijing and some sort of China bashing on the campaign trail. The real risk in Asia, as you've heard me say before, is a risk of a hot war in the South China Sea or in the Taiwan Straits as a result of some sort of accident. So that's the risk I think people are underpricing.
But David, it's Tim, because you know Asia so well, there are those certainly the South China Sea dynamics. But how about the rest of Asia? And who gains by this? I mean, it seems like there's quite a charm offensive with Korea. So Hynix, for sure, Samsung have a lot to gain by this. I think the Japanese chip makers, and I think there was a time everything was made in Japan. And I think there's an aspiration there. Anything to talk about?
Absolutely. I was just, as you said, just back from Taiwan. A lot of great activity on the ground there. It's not just TSMC. There's a lot of other chip makers there as well and people who supply into that industry. So definitely keep an eye on Taiwan. Keep an eye on somewhere like India, which might benefit from a transfer of some of the manufacturing by people like Foxconn, another Taiwan-listed company under Han High Precision, to India. But I think you're right. North Asia is the one set to benefit most from ongoing struggles in the chip market. You could see Japan, you could see South Korea, and you could see Taiwan really benefiting.
I know you said it's not won't translate into a company-specific risk, David. You just got back from Taiwan, and you're talking about Taiwan Semi, and I have to ask you because it doesn't have the multiple necessarily as some of the other chips, and I think that there's some premium taken out of it just because of China risk. Is that misguided in your view, or is there in fact a China risk?
I think there is in fact a China risk. It's impossible to pick when that's going to materialize. But I think you're just one election away or one fiery campaign speech away from having those tensions ratchet up. So that I would be concerned about that. TSMC is obviously diversifying quickly into other places that they can manufacture, including here in the United States. So I'd keep an eye on that. But they definitely have quite a lot of China risk.
All right, David, great to see you. Thank you. David Riedel of Riedel Research. Guy.
Not the stemware.
Well, also actually this summer.
But no, I know. We mentioned it last time.
Related to that, yeah.
Look, I'll reemphasize. Let's talk about David's. I mean, he's on the ground there, and he sees the risk. Clearly, the market doesn't see it. But I'll say this as well. I think it was a year and a half or so ago, Jensen Huang made comments about the existential risk to their company in terms of China-Taiwan. Now, that stock's actually been, it's been on a lower left, upper right. But how, if something were to manifest itself there, NVIDIA probably stands to lose the most.
Yeah, I think there's two mitigating factors here that have kind of kept this situation self-contained. Most importantly, I think it's really been the AI boom. I think the kind of excitement around that dynamic has been more of a focus and more of a tailwind than this particularly might be as a headwind. And then, as he mentioned, the fact that it's concentrated within the government sector, until this leaks really into the private space or until the Chinese regime is essentially able to dictate that these sanctions are placed into the private area of the business or semi-state-owned, however you want to kind of describe it, I think it's going to be relatively self-contained, and the excitement around AI more than offsets even the 15 and 27% respective revenue allocation to AMD and Intel.
Yeah, Mel's point, though, about the premium that's been taken out of Taiwan Semi, despite the fact how well it trades, it's very near 52-week all-time highs, that sort of thing. If you think of their customer concentration, Apple at 23%, Qualcomm is about 8 or 9%, and then the AMD, I think, is 7 or 8% or so. I mean, this stock trades for expected revenue growth of 20% next year in 2025 and 24% expected EPS growth at 18 times. Like, that doesn't seem, when you look at that customer concentration. So when I look at that name, it just tells you on valuation relative to its peers and that growth rate that there is some worry about something going on with Taiwan Semi, but not too much in some of these other names that have actually, they don't seem to mind at all.
Coming up, the next weight loss revolution, a potential solution to the muscle mass loss associated with the popular drugs. We'll sit down with the CEO of Biohaven to discuss his company's entry to the space and the benefits it could offer patients. And we're celebrating Women's Heritage Month. Here's the CEO and co-founder of Element Biosciences.
When change makers can challenge the status quo, they will meet adversity. So I think that change maker will have to be driven by a profound higher purpose to to bring great benefits to human society. Only then the change makers can motivate themselves and transcend these kind of adversity into motivations.
Welcome back to Fast Money. As GLP-1 obesity drugs soar in popularity, companies are pioneering treatments to help patients shed pounds while trying to counteract the muscle loss that can occur alongside it. Among the players putting their hats in the ring is Biohaven. Preclinical animal testing of the company's experimental drug showed significant weight reduction coupled with lean mass gain. The treatment currently in phase one for obesity, with phase two trial projected to begin in the second quarter of this year. For more, we are joined by Biohaven CEO Dr. Vlad Coric. Dr. Coric, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on today, Melissa.
I mean, this is one of the biggest issues with GLP-1s. 20 to 50% of the weight loss is actually muscle mass. So your new drug is a myostatin inhibitor. Can you just, you know, in layman's terms, describe how that works?
Sure. And you're exactly right. What we're trying to do is result in significant weight loss without losing muscle mass, which is what you see with the GLPs. And so Biohaven's approach is a drug called T-alpha, and it targets a molecule called myostatin. And myostatin regulates your muscle growth. And so by blocking myostatin, we believe T-alpha will increase lean muscle mass, increase your resting metabolism, and result in significant weight loss, and do so without the reduction in muscle mass that you see with GLPs.
So T-alpha is already in testing for spinal muscular dystrophy. What has the safety profile been there? You're already going to enter phase three, I believe, in the second half of this year.
So we started our trials in muscular diseases, and there we have experience now with over 500 patients, and thus far a very clean safety profile, and we're waiting for our top line data and SMA in the second half of this year.
In terms of phase two, can you give us any idea of timing, and also describe to us what you hope to achieve here, since it sounds like you're going to be testing T-alpha alone, but also T-alpha combined with the GLP-1?
That's right. As you know, the GLPs have become the new standard of care for obesity. And what we want to demonstrate is that T-alpha can compete as monotherapy against the GLPs, but also we think there's an important synergistic role that we could play in conjunction with GLPs. So our phase two trial set to start in the second half of this year. We'll look at T-alpha alone and T-alpha plus GLPs compared to GLPs alone. And we think that will really give us the data we need to understand what's the best way to advance this asset.
How much pressure do you feel in terms of getting the testing done and getting this to market? I mean, Eli Lilly with its Versanis is working on a similar myostatin inhibitor, which would be the answer to the drug that you are testing. And so I'm curious, how fierce is this competition for this particular weight loss treatment that combats that muscle loss?
Well, you know, we're no stranger to taking on other big companies. As you recall, we had a migraine asset that we launched against AbbVie, and we became the number one prescribed migraine asset. I think you have to follow the science, and, you know, the pressure comes off when you have a really good drug profile like T-alpha in the clinic thus far. And what we're seeing there is we're seeing nice differentiation in some very preliminary data. We're seeing increases in muscle mass. We're seeing decreases in fat. And if that translates to a positive phase three trial, I think the data will take the pressure off, and we'll have a nice differentiated product at the end of that phase three trial.
As I mentioned, one of your competitors is Versanis, which is a unit of Eli Lilly because it just bought Versanis last year. So they'll have deep pockets. Do you have the cash to bring this to market when that time comes?
Yeah. By our last quarterly filing, we have over $300 million in cash on hand. We're well funded at this point in our research. But what's important is that we have a differentiation story even compared to the Versanis asset that you described. That asset blocks the receptor very robustly. And if you look at their data, they had 40% rates of muscle spasm and diarrhea. And that's not what we're seeing in our trials. We don't see those type of side effects in our preliminary data. So if that holds true, I think we'll have access to capital and be able to continue to develop this program.
$385.5 million exactly, to be exact, in terms of cash and cash equivalents. So congratulations. What do you think the revenue opportunity is, assuming everything goes favorably for this drug? What are you guys forecasting, if anything?
Well, you know, I think this whole space people are thinking could be valued in $100 to $150 billion in the obesity space in general. Look, I don't want to get ahead of ourselves. We need to see that phase three data that we're planning to launch in the second half of this year to really know how we'll differentiate from the competitors. Once we have that data, I'll be able to give you a more accurate assessment about, you know, market size. But I think we all know obesity is a major health problem affecting 2 billion people worldwide. And so once we have our data, I look forward to answering that question.
Do you think T-Alpha could, I mean, I know it's early, but could it replace or at least, you know, gain some significant part of the market share that Novo and Lilly have in terms of their GLP-1s?
Look, I give a lot of credit to Novo and Lilly. They changed the paradigm in obesity. What's most impressive about their data is you get reductions in things like heart attack, stroke, diabetes, hypertension. It's going to have a meaningful impact in the obesity treatment for years to come. I think that we will have a very important drug here that could either act synergistically or alone. And once we have that data, I look forward to you know, discussing how we'll differentiate in the marketplace. Until then, that's a little bit too soon to say how we'll shake out compared to the competitors.
Fair enough. Hope you'll come back and keep us posted. Appreciate your time.
Thank you very much. Take care.
Vlad Korich of Biohaven. It's big space. This is a, you know, the holy grail for a lot of pharma companies.
Huge space. Stock is probably trading higher in the aftermarket. $4.5 billion market cap. So here's the bet. If you're saying they're going to be successful, this is a 7 to 10 bagger from the current price that it's trading at. If it fails, it goes right back down to $10, which is probably where it was prior to all the news. That's really what it comes down to. If you're willing to make that bet, this is the place to do it in.
But what we've learned as this, like our conversation, certainly mine, it all becomes more sophisticated. We've learned that the niche elements of this industry are part of what's continuing to be developed. Biohaven certainly has a role here. And this is a company that certainly has carved out a real presence in the hard to diagnose different parts of the market. And this is kind of where they belong. So I think they stay.
Yeah, I think the fact that they can be used as an independent type of drug and also, as you mentioned, synergistically along with the other GLP-1s kind of repositions what that target adjustable market may be. It's not as if you have to be a substitute one for the other. You can actually take both drugs concurrently, or that's the supposed final situation with the drug. So I think that situation, you know, as we continue to develop these drugs, you're going to see the second order effects addressed, which is the muscle loss associated with the weight loss. And so I think this is just a natural order of progression of things. And I think it's a pretty compelling story. I think that the proof will ultimately be in the pudding. It's still very much early innings.
Or in the phase three.
Yeah.
Coming up, Bitcoin bouncing back. We're tackling the crypto rise back over 70K and the proxy players seeing a boost. That's next. More Fast Money in two. Welcome back to Fast Money. Major cryptos jumping higher today with Bitcoin back over 70K. Ether and Solana also surging. The rally helping crypto proxies rise as well. MicroStrategy soaring more than 20% to all-time highs. Grayscale rising 11% and Coinbase at its highest close in more than 2 years. Is this just risk-taking in the markets, or is there something more to this, to the Bitcoin story? Is this fundamentally believing that it has a place in institutional investing?
Well, it's a little perverse on a day when the dollar rose and yields rose. Okay, so that's part of what, you know, but I think the Fed lit the market on fire last week. I really do. I think they sent it all signal ahead. And as a gold investor, and I own some Bitcoin, not a ton. I wish I owned a whole lot more. But I do think it's strangely ironic that gold is actually rallying because Bitcoin's rallying. And that's not what we're used to.
Dan?
Well, we're not used to it. The narrative has changed dramatically in the last 5 years. It's actually, and it's almost validated a lot of the folks. I mean, like you just mentioned, with rates where they were, with the dollar rising here, you know, Bitcoin's not supposed to work in that sort of thing. And I just keep hearing this from a lot of smart investors who dismissed it years ago. I guess we're waiting for Jamie to get all in there, Jamie Dimon, that is, who just see this as a real risk asset, or a macro risk asset that plays a way that they, you know, have traded lots of other risk assets. So, but this one's new, and maybe it's more interesting than gold right here.
Green light, Tim, I think, hit the nail on the head. For all the other reasons, you know, ETFs, all institute, I get it. It's the green light that the Fed gave risk assets like gold, like Bitcoin, to sort of be off to the races. And listen, I don't know what's going to happen to Bitcoin. I think I know what's going to happen to gold. And I still think gold's in the really early innings. So buckle up, people.
Up next, final trades.
Final trade time, Tim.
JWeb, I think China, whether you expect the macro to improve or not, I think the trading in these core stocks has seen a low.
Bono in.
I think whether or not technology holds, I think there's a case to be made for owning energy. It's under-owned. XLU.
Dan.
Yeah, XLU, utilities. I'm not sure rates are going so much higher here. It looks like they've been basing the breakout.
Guy.
Baseball starts this week, Mel, as
can't
you know.
Wait.
We'll break it down on other shows. Transocean, that comes out rig. It's been stealth rally mode.
All right. Thank you for watching Fast Money. We'll see you back here tomorrow at 5 for more Fast. Meantime, do not go anywhere. Mad Money with Jim Cramer starts right now.
All opinions expressed by the Fast Money participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information the Fast Money participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Fast Money disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/fastmoneydisclaimer.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.